Good morning, Susan. Thanks very much for joining me.
Good morning. You're welcome.
Now, to kick things off, the world watched Brexit and the US election, amongst a couple of other high-profile things, almost on a live stream. But what are some of the other major economic and political events that have happened that Western media perhaps hasn't paid as much attention to?
I think we are always drawn into the dramas of a superpower, or a former superpower in the case, mainly because, you know, what happens in the US can affect us. And has in the past, drawing us into conflict or affecting global markets. But there is a lot of unrest and human suffering around the world that we have to keep our eye on, partly because it can affect Australia, but also for humanitarian reasons, because in a globalised, interconnected world, all these things will affect you, even if you don't always quite recognise the direct link. So some of the issues that we're looking at in the conversation piece, we've picked 17 places on the map, and you can see a lovely, strangely coloured map on the conversation website. And some of those places include Venezuela, which is rapidly imploding. We're talking about scenes like a bad doomsday movie, people rioting and taking out the shopping centres because of lack of food due to the spiking inflation rates. We're looking at places that have been in deep conflict for a long time without sufficient political attention, like the Central African Republic and Southern Sudan. We're also looking at places a little bit closer to home, like the Philippines, with their shoot-to-kill drug policy. Some really frightening scenes in Jakarta over the mayoral race there. And quite a lot of course, deep unrest around the South China Sea. And if there's one thing that your listeners should be staying awake at night freaking out about, it's the South China Sea in traditional security terms. And then we know that climate change is having an impact on people's lives all over the world and leading to migration and scarcity. So any of these traditional political crises now have a kind of a climate factor to them that is making everything worse. It's the risk multiplier, they call it, in UN terms. And so it's a pretty scary picture, and we really don't quite have a functional global governance system that is dealing with these issues at the moment. So it puts a lot more pressure on countries like Australia to step up and do their part.
Yeah, well, I mean, it seems like a lot of these places are really close to home as well, in the sort of Australasian supercontinent region. One of the things which I know you've talked about, which you didn't mention there, is what's happening in North Korea and the Central Emergency Response Fund in North Korea, with more than 2.2 million people needing UN humanitarian assistance. Are you able to unpack a little bit more about what's been happening there?
Yes. Well, we've had, I mean, obviously North Korea has been in the news with that unprecedented attack, assassination of the leader's brother in the Malaysia airport using a weapon of mass destruction, a listed UN weapon of mass destruction, a DX agent. And of course, that is so dramatic that people have really focused on that. But what they haven't been focusing on is the, you know, extraordinary humanitarian disaster unfolding for the ordinary people of North Korea. And it's been going for nearly a decade now, famine and scarcity and all kinds of human rights violations. So our own Justice Michael Kirby, who is the UN Special Rapporteur for North Korea, he's released reports recently, and he was in Queensland last week talking about, you know, really the gravity of the situation. And so the UN Secretary General has called for another emergency funding. But of course, you know, it's unpopular to donate funds for a country like North Korea, which is seen as so politically alien to the rest of the system. But the fact is, you know, the ordinary people of North Korea shouldn't necessarily be allowed to suffer for, you know, what their leader is doing. So it's a really difficult situation, that one. There's all kinds of problems with access, but what we do know is the situation there is more dire every day.
Well, I find the North Korea situation particularly striking because it's almost lampooned here in like Western culture. What's going on in North Korea? People think it's almost a little bit funny. And there was that movie made about the whole situation a few years ago with Seth Rogen and the other one, James Franco. And yeah, the situation over there sort of become a little bit of a global farce when, of course, it is a tragedy.
Well, I mean, I can see why people find the leader, you know, people like to mock political leaders, you know, like Trump or like, you know, Kim Jong-il. And I understand that. But the idea is the leader is not the country. If the leader is imposing draconian policies that do not promote the wealth of the health and well-being of their citizens, then at the UN there's something called the responsibility to protect, the idea that if a sovereign can't or won't protect its citizens and fulfill their basic human rights, then the international community has a responsibility to try and help those civilians however it can. Not necessarily in terms of military intervention, but in terms of humanitarian. So, yes, I think it's important for everyone to think, okay, yes, he probably deserves our mockery, but the people who are marching in those endless parades probably do not. And some sort of level of education about what's happening in North Korea is a really good idea. And as I said, you can start with an Australian, Michael Kirby, and his latest report on the situation in North Korea.
Well, we'll provide links to the further reading on that topic when we do post this story online. Now, finally, before I let you go, Susan, you mentioned the situation in the South China Sea. Can you expand a little bit? You mentioned that as being something quite dire. Can you expand a little bit on what's going on there and what's so dire about the situation?
Well, it's one of those proxy issues. So China has some claims over some of the Spratly Islands. Historical claims, it says, and Vietnam and the Philippines have more traditional claims under international law of the sea around their contiguous zones and what they own. And you would think that these islands, you know, you would at first glance think this is not, you know, this is not something that should be keeping security people awake at night. But it is, because it's become a proxy for China territorial claims. Versus Japan in particular, so Japan and its allies. So it's become a sort of a place where warships go up and down, staring at each other, playing a big game of chicken. And it's potentially very frightening indeed. But not frightening in the sense that we should necessarily expect China to be aggressive. China is acting on long historical feelings of not wanting to be humiliated again in an Asia-focused war. I mean, the China-Japan relationship is as bad as it's ever been, really. And so I suppose that's the traditional security problem that, you know, draws a lot of people's eyes, because it's like, as I said, a big game of chicken and anything could happen. But in terms of, I suppose, the point we're trying to make in the conversation article is that, you know, any of these other issues could flare, and we don't have this strong governance. We have a UN that is almost crippled in its budget. We don't have enough money for humanitarian responses, and when countries pledge, they don't necessarily deliver. We are learning all the time from big emergencies, but not fast enough, it seems. In our region in particular, we have relatively weak regional institutions, and so, you know, for us it's ASEAN and APEC, the East Asia Summit. They need to get a lot stronger in the way they deal with conflict prevention. And Australia itself needs to be a lot stronger. We have obviously very sophisticated diplomatic service, but it doesn't necessarily have or hasn't focused on conflict mediation and prevention. We've focused on building up the multilateral system, and that's really at threat at the moment. So I want all your listeners to really keep an eye on the NSAP white paper process. It's a really important issue for all Australians to start thinking about what our foreign policy should be for the next 10 years. And I just read this morning in The Age that the foreign minister has recalled all the ambassadors to try and reset our foreign policy in this exciting age that we live in. So now is the time to really keep your eye on foreign policy, because it's all there to be recreated and reimagined and reinvented.
Mm. Yeah, well, it's a whole heap to try and cram into such a short interview. So we will be providing links to wider reading when we do publish this story online. As I said, Susan, thanks so much for giving us such a quick lowdown on what's happening internationally and what we need to be keeping an eye on. Thanks very much for your time.
With one eye open.
Yeah, well, that's right. All the best, Susan. Thanks.